You're listening to a special presentation by ACRM and RACGP on the transition to college-led training. Podcast produced by GP Supervisors Australia. We would like to begin by acknowledging the traditional custodians of the land on which this recording was produced and pay our respects to their elders past, present, future, and their families.
Thank you everyone for joining us. I'm Carla Taylor, the new CEO of GPSA, and we are very fortunate to have a great group of panelists from the two colleges to answer your questions and ensure you have clarity about what GP training will look like when 1st of February rolls around.
For ACRM, we have Kyra Moss, General Manager of Education Services. For RACGP, the three panellists are Dr. Karen Jodlowski-Tan, the National Clinical Lead for Rural, Dr. Gerard Ingham, the Senior Medical Advisor for the Supervisor Professional Development Program, and Glenn Wallace, PLT Transition Manager. Is there bi-college collaboration on the transition from RTO-led training?
We're hoping to give you some further detail and some reassurance that ACRM and RACGP are indeed meeting regularly and working constructively towards an outcome that really delivers the least painful outcome for those stakeholders on the ground, because we know that the registrars and the supervisors' training practices are the most important in the GP training system and essential to delivering the future of GP training. The college-led training organisational model about to be revealed on the back of a signed agreement with the Department of Health, which we are told is imminent but not yet in place, is going to deliver a program that is locally delivered, regionally supported and nationally consistent. Now, what that looks like on the ground is that we will have a program that at the national level will have functions like IT, HR, finance, those sorts of things that there would have been duplication across 9 different RTOs specific to their particular location. Regionally, you'll have a medical education team, and locally, you'll have a medical education team and administrative staff to cover on the variety of functions that you would be used to liaising with. And to give you a little bit of context around how the split actually looks, at the local level, we have the majority of staff within the RACGP model. So 43% of all staff will be placed within local jurisdictions. 37% will be located in regional specific, so at the state basis. And then there are 10% that are national roles and 10% that are shared services. So very much geared towards ensuring that you as the end users, the most important people in the system, actually have the greatest level of support rather than it being significantly top heavy. The concept around the national, regional, local is to provide national consistency, high stake activities, educational resources. So rather than having systems that are replicated 9 different ways, we will have one particular process. Regionally, those teams will step in. They will be the ones that have the regional context information, that will have the regional stakeholder engagement experience, the quality assurance delivery. And then at the local level, exactly as you do now within your RTO, you'll have the program delivery staff, the case management of the registrars and support for GP supervisors and practices and registrars.
That then leads to the ACRM program. The two programs have a lot of similarities, but we've also got some differences, because if we've got two different fellowship programs, there's going to be some different requirements. But the ACRM college-led training model is based around the registrar at the centre of all of our services and at the centre of the focus of how we deliver our college-led training. To support that, like RACGP, we have a national program. Our national program consists of a national selection process, a national assessment structure, national accreditation standards and accreditation structures, which will then be supported and delivered regionally and locally. It also contains the work that we do around evaluation, the work that we do around standards, and of course the development of our curriculum. That all occurs nationally. That structure will then support our regional training networks. ACRM is already in the space of transition. So we transitioned New South Wales across in the last 6 months, the formal date being the 8th of August. We now have Tasmania coming across as well. And our regional training networks have been built to scale up on the programs that we already deliver, the Independent Pathway and the Rural Generalist Training Scheme, and we're currently scaling those up even further to be able to deliver college-led training across each of the jurisdictions. We then have local teaching practices and posts, which is, of course, where the true training occurs. That's with our supervisors, and we understand that. So into our systems, we have a few key things that underpin this: training agreements, supervisor and local training support, and the staff collaborations and services agreements, because we recognise that whatever we're doing, we need to do that to support those teaching practices altogether. In terms of the ACRM model, we expect to have staff on the ground in the coming months, but certainly to have the staff on the ground to deliver these networks by January. In our training networks, at a registrar, practice and supervisor level, we've got a range of services that we will be providing, everything from cultural safety through to advocacy and support. And these will be provided through our regional and local roles. We have roles already in place. We have training network coordinators that oversee each state and provide support structures to the team. We have regional directors of training already in place so that they can guide our education development and guide clinical and medical education as well as training. We have medical educators in place, and of course we're busy recruiting more to ensure that we can deliver college-led training. Cultural educators and cultural mentors will be respectfully recruited through whatever process is decided by both of the colleges to do that. We have training officers already in each state, but we will be recruiting more of those as our registrar numbers grow. Rural support officers who will be dedicated to being the point of contact for practices, I mean, caseloads of practices so that they get to know you, they know who you are, they know what your needs are, and they know what challenges you're facing while trying to train ACRM registrars to provide that support, not only around accreditation, but also around networking and resources, and to ensure that they have a single point of go-to. They're not ringing a 1-800 number and being hunted around the college. We'll also have supervisor liaison officers and registrar liaison officers, because we recognise that the advocacy and the peer support that's available through those two mechanisms is really, really important. So these are the regional roles that you can expect to see from ACRM in each of our jurisdictions or states.
How will registrar exams and ECTVs be impacted by the transition?
From an ACRM perspective, I can reassure you that our assessment standard remains the same. The format of our assessments will remain the same, as will our supervision standards will remain the same. Alongside that, in bi-college accreditation and the work that we've been doing together, which we'll get into shortly, we are able to, of course, align certain things. But in terms of the separate college standards, ours will remain unchanged as it was written for rural generalism. Our curriculum has been written to meet the RG requirements, and we will be retaining that.
In terms of exams and ECTVs for the RACGP, very similar. ECTVs will remain a thing within the RACGP's offering, and certainly the exams you can expect, certainly in the immediate future, will be consistent with what they have been.
For us also, exams and ECTVs, we run mini CEXs and they will remain the same. We do have requirements for assessments to be carried out in practice with ACRM. Some of those are provided to our supervisors to carry out with our registrars, but we also use medical educators to assist in the delivery of those. So those are able to be found in our standards, but certainly happy to take that on in finer detail a little bit later.
I just want to add, from RACGP perspective, we are strengthening our workplace-based assessment and creating a more consistent model nationally. So for some of you who are quite used to the type of workplace-based assessment we're using, you may find there's very little change. For others, it may be a little bit different from what you're used to, but all of you are already doing ECTV type and workplace-based type of assessment. So we will be supporting HRTO in that transitional phase.
What is being done to streamline accreditation?
In terms of accreditation, I think accreditation is something that probably causes headaches for practice managers and supervisors alike, because there's a lot of work involved. And as a supervisor in the past, I know it was a lot of work and a lot of preparation. So we've listened to your feedback, and the colleges have worked very closely together to look at how we can make that process much simpler for everyone. We're not going to ask you to do the same thing twice for each college. Particularly, a lot of you are delivering supervision for both college registrars. So the good news is we are going to work towards aligning your general practice accreditation process with your training accreditation process. So instead of you going through practice accreditation through like ACPA or QRP, they may be gathering some information that with your permission, they can share with us, and that will reduce the amount of information you have to then provide again to the colleges.
How are the colleges working together to make accreditation less of a burden?
Working towards accreditation with both colleges, you can nominate to work with one college to complete the bulk of your accreditation process. And of course, there are nuances with each college. We can't align everything, but where the data points are similar, we are going to share it between us so you don't have to answer the same questions twice. And then each college will touch base with you to complete the rest of what's specific to that college. So that is really good. That's our intention. Be patient with us while we iron out the initial processes. It's not going to be perfect straight off, but that's what we intend to do. And we've got the processes. We're meeting weekly, Cara and I and others here, to work out the processes. So over the next 12 months, 24 months, that's where we want to end up. So the processes will hopefully become much simpler to you, and what you do for practice accreditation will also feed into that process. So reduce your workload, and that's our desire. And we're working with the RACGP practice accreditation team on the next iteration of the general practice accreditation standards so that all the processes become streamlined over the next triennium. We're going to continue meeting, but we've formed an accreditation working group that after the transition will continue meeting regularly to make sure that this joint process works well and is working the way as we intend to. And then for reaccreditation, as you work towards, there are going to be a three-year cycle. So for those of you who are accredited already, your next accreditation due date is when we'll work you through the new processes. So you'll remain accredited, hopefully, till at least middle of next year or beyond that. So we'll work with you as people's accreditation come up. And then to make that reaccreditation process easier, we'll continue to share information. So if there's critical incidents that come up, we'll make sure that the other college is also aware and processes and steps are in place to support that practice or supervise.
We are endeavouring to make life as easy as possible within the constraints of our own standards and programs. So I want to reassure our supervisors and practices and doctors and registrars online that we do understand that we need to make things easier. Nonetheless, we have a standard to meet because we're also reportable to the AMC on both ends. So having said that, the teams have been working together now for over a year to pull together the work, to see where we can share data, to see where we can share governance mechanisms, to see where we can think about the touch points with practices where the pain is likely to occur or for our supervisors, and how we can alleviate that by, even though we've got separate standards and separate fellowship programs, to be able to work together so that people aren't needing to have multiple conversations or set up multiple pieces of paperwork. Because we do understand it is considerable paperwork to get accredited, but you know, we've had some key principles that we developed early in the piece that we're adhering to, and that's about ensuring that practices get a say in how they train their registrars and which registrars they have, ensuring that practices don't feel like they have to choose a college, for example, that we can work to be college agnostic, ensuring that practices have a direct point of contact and know who they can go to in each of the colleges, and also ensuring that, you know, we can share that data in the background so the practices are only needing to do things once and we can be clear around what those processes are. So it's absolutely still a work in progress, but the principles that were there were about honouring what it is that our supervisors and practices offer to our trainees and not making that work any harder.
And Kyra, I think we're also recognising that a lot of the paperwork and facilitation is actually done by our practice managers. So We've been really mindful of the feedback that's come back through the practice manager network about how we can make life easier for them as well.
Whilst accreditation can be complicated, so can placement be complicated. That is an interface with practices that's going to create anxiety and strain if we don't manage this well. So much like accreditation, we've developed some principles that underpin placements, which is, again, putting the practice and the registrar at the centre of this, that we understand practices will be invested in having a voice and a view to which registrars they choose. Registrars are highly invested in terms of where they train, that the colleges will work together to have placement timings that are aligned so the practices are receiving placement capacity surveys and information at the same time, so that results are coming out at the same time. So the practices have a very clear sense of where they stand in the process. And we're aligning our processes in the background, of course, because alongside other entities such as workforce organisations, we will be assessing, of course, what placements are suitable. Now, where a practice is only accredited to ACRM or only accredited to the RACGP, this process is much, much simpler in that you'll only have one college to deal with. But we are aware that there's a very large percentage of our market where there are practices that train both kinds of registrars or registrars that want to train on both pathways. So there is this overlap. What it does require, as it has up to this point, is for the two colleges to work together, have hard conversations, to name problems and to have governance mechanisms in place so that we can share information where it's appropriate and where it's the appropriate information to ensure that placements still have all of the important information that RTOs have added to their management, the nuanced information at a local level, the training information from their training plans and their medical educators. These are the components that will sit back in underneath placement that both of the colleges are in agreement that they are very, very important so that we can ensure that we don't lose the detail that goes into placement management, that we can actually succeed in putting in placements that go the distance, you know, that don't fall over and that give practices an opportunity to train doctors who might potentially stay in their communities and registrars and training doctors the opportunity to get a sense of where it is that they would like to be long-term and to train. And certainly for ACRM, that's a very important aspect because, as you know, we are all about rural and remote and we're all about trying to keep our doctors out in the communities they're training in.
What I can say has been discussed in the process and the paperwork developed in the background within the RACGPs, a set of codes and principles that are written in very plain language. So we're not looking at 30 odd pages of legalistic language. We're trying to keep it as simple as we possibly can. We're looking at aligning both the accreditation, the practice and supervisor as well. There will be a placement agreement each year, but there will be one accredited training site and a supervisor agreement that is signed at the time of accreditation and just simply updated as supervisors are added or moved out of a particular facility. We will absolutely, as Kyra has suggested, work through any of the sticky things that crop up. And there will be things that crop up, but the commitment is there on both the RACGP and ACRM because we have to make it work for you. We know that if we make this difficult for you, you simply will walk away and we can't afford that to happen. You are absolutely 100% our priority. And that's what we've been working on in the background. We won't always get it absolutely right. And we'd like to ask for your permission to continually improve the system. And we want you to keep us honest. We actually want to receive the feedback from you and the suggestions from you. Your local teams on the ground will be enabled to feed that information through. I've been working internally with identifying the communication pathways to ensure that people will have somebody that they can call to answer the questions that they need around placements and accreditation. Answers that they don't get bounced around colleges as well. So there's absolute commitment there.
Will the transition change supervision as we know it now?
So I'm actually going to throw to Jared. So Jared, you've been a very long-term supervisor. You've been in this place. I'm not sure how many transitions you've been through. I think we would talk before it was about four. So quite significant. What's going to be the same? What's going to be different this time?
It's true. I've been through many transitions and every time there's a transition, to be honest, it does go back a little bit. There's always a loss. It's very hard to keep going as well as things are going. You have nine very mature programs and ACRM's program, very mature all around the country. And inevitably, there's a little bit of a shakeup and there's a little bit of a loss and it takes the new organisations a little bit of time to get up to speed. Is it a time for innovation? There is an option at this time to say, wow, we can finally do it exactly the way we think it should be done and do it that way. But if we did that, we'll lose a lot of people along the way. And although perhaps we initially, many of us came into this saying, well, we can finally get this done, you know, workplace-based assessment, we can get this, we can get that done and implemented in the program. If we make too much change and we make too many people unhappy, as Glenn was saying before, and lose people, that's not really going to work. So you'll find, I think, from both colleges that the experience for supervisors, and this will be probably the take-home message, the experience for supervisors should be not significantly different. Okay, registrars will be placed in your practice much the same. Your accreditations will by and large continue and the cycles will continue in a fairly similar way that they happened before. You will just be doing what you do with your registrars, pretty much the same as what you'd be doing before. You might be paid a bit more for teaching than you were being paid before. And, you know, the experience will be the same. There might be slightly different assessment forms and things to complete. But really the aim of both colleges is to make this as painless for supervisors as we can. And that's part of the reason for coming along, is to actually hear from you so that we think, oh, gee, if we're missing something or something's really terrible, we need to be knowing about that so we make sure that that doesn't happen.
So this is funny, Jared. I, you know, last transition, I think I was one of the very grumpy supervisors.
So was I.
And I think what I've found is that teaching continues, registrars continues, and general practice continues. And we're in such a fragile time of our profession. It's really, really important that we do this very well. And all of us are trying so hard to ensure that we do the right thing.
How is supervisor professional development changing?
The key things from an Akron point of view is that many of our RGs don't just work in one type of practice. They're managing EDs, they're DMSs, they're working in general practice, they're working in retrieval services. We're keenly aware that on top of being supervisors to our registrars in the training program, they're also supervising students and JMOs and a range of other people in their practices, and the burden is quite high. So we have kept this in mind whilst developing PD requirements, whilst considering what it is that our supervisors need, but also whilst considering how we're asking our supervisors to work with us. Because I agree, I can see that how hard it is at the moment to attract doctors into general practice. That is a challenge. But what we don't want is our young doctors seeing supervisors overburdened and thinking, oh my God, I don't want to do that in the future either. So I think it's important because we have to train our young doctors into supervisors as well. So I think we are bearing these principles in mind. We are applying them to all of our decisions and thought-making processes as we move forward. And whilst they might only be principles, principles are a very strong place to start from for both the colleges. You know, we've been able to come back to these in supervisor professional development and accreditation and placement and say, this decision we're making, does it actually stick to the principles that we've discussed? Does it stick to what we've agreed? And I think that's been a good guiding force.
Supervisor professional development, I'd have to say that it's still very much a work in progress, partly because we don't have an agreed set of funds from the federal government for supervisor professional development. So it's very hard to say you'll need to do this many hours or do that many hours when we actually don't know. First principle from both colleges is that we don't want to be setting requirements that we can't pay you to do. And I have to say that this is an area, like I've just come from a meeting earlier today, the colleges meet regularly to talk. It's not our intent to have, it's a disaster if the outcome is that supervisors have to complete professional development from both programs. And our intent is to work together to make that professional development by either college is recognised. Currently, all existing supervisors, everyone who is currently accredited as a supervisor will continue to be accredited as a supervisor. Everyone is being grandparented across, okay? There will be new requirements for new supervisors. There'll be new courses for them to do, whatever, from next year. By and large, we want to make it that all existing supervisors will be able to continue and continue to have professional development experiences and have them recognised by both colleges.
So we're talking about the magic pot of money. The magic pudding, I think, is around $45 million. It's actually not a lot, and there's a lot that has to be done out of that. Supervisor PD, one of the things is this is core funding that must come out of that. And I can tell you from a GPSA point of view, we are very much digging our heels in that this must come out to supervisors. Now, the problem is this is discretional between the colleges about how this is spent. And that's our discomfort. The problem is the grant hasn't been signed yet, which means nobody actually knows exactly how much that's going to be. We've got an approximate. Supervisor PD is essential to what we do. And I think one of the things that we went through the process of what's nationally consistent is there was no national consistency. So what might have been, you know, 6 hours in one RTO, it might have been 9 or 12 hours in another. And what was a lead supervisor, a secondary supervisor. It was quite confusing. So at least this way we will have some idea of what the baseline for every supervisor should be.
What I can say, Nicole, in relation to that is the principle and the approach that the college have taken is to look very closely at what has been happening across all of the regions and to very much look to ensure that the supervisor PD is responsive and appropriate to the local environment, but also that it doesn't disadvantage people in whatever we choose to do into the future. So there are a large number of staff that are all certainly championing for supervisors on the inside.
What is the National Consistent Payment, or NCP?
One of the principles of this was nationally consistent payments, which meant that all supervisors, whether you're in AIR or Mackay or Woodend, that we would be paid for the same work that we do. There would be some consideration if you were between rural and urban, but supervision is supervision. And there is also the distinction between practice payments, teaching payments, and CPD. When we actually started looking at the data, we actually found that there was a huge inconsistency across the RTOs. And we wanted to make sure that, as I said, all supervisors got paid for doing the same work.
Because I think it's a really fantastic outcome for supervisors and training practices. The teaching payments are split and determined based on the modified Monash model. And essentially, it's the Department of Health's commitment to ensure that additional support is provided to those in more rural and remote locations. But one of the guiding principles was really that nobody should be worse off. And certainly the rates that have been applied for the teaching payments are absolutely the highest common denominator. So a number of the RTOs have been lifted to the highest rate among all of the RTOs. So that should support the work that you're all doing on the ground. Thereafter, we've got the practice payments. Both the teaching payments and the practice payments are going to be delivered by Services Australia, regardless of whether you're training with an ACRM registrar or an RACGP registrar. And again, those practice payments have been lifted to the highest common denominator amongst all of the RTOs. So it's really great news for quite a number of practices across the country. That represents quite a good increase. And certainly if you look beyond MMM 1 and 2, then obviously there's a loading that has been applied to all of the MMM groupings. Both colleges are currently liaising with Services Australia to ensure that the transfer mechanisms work between our training management systems such that training practices receive those funds in appropriate timing. Practice payments are prospective, paid every quarter in advance, whereas the teaching payments are retrospective, 1 month in arrears. And there's a mechanism in there for Services Australia to be able to pay a supervisor directly, such that if we have remote supervision systems, that remote supervisor can be paid directly, but otherwise those teaching payments will go to the training practice. And the reason behind that is to ensure that those practices that have group teaching arrangements can actually apportion those funds appropriate to however they choose to manage training within their practice context. So great thought has gone into making that process fit for purpose as well. We're looking and monitoring and making sure that that process with Services Australia is progressing really well and ensuring that our training management systems are up to date and ready to take on that new process.
What have the colleges planned for practice managers?
Alongside our training officer roles that will support the training and supervisor liaison officers, we have developed roles called rural support officers. And rural support officers will be the direct point of contact for practices. In that, they will not only be the go-to for, I have a question about accreditation, or I've got a registrar that's a bit wobbly and I need some extra resources, what do we do here? But they'll also be rolling out networking and resourcing for practice managers. We also understand that measuring capacity to teach in a practice needs input from a practice manager also in terms of managing how appointments are booked and teaching time is laid out. So we do expect that we'll be having direct relationships with practice managers. Of course, accreditation is a great reason to get involved. That's a nice segue in, but it's not the only one, and we understand that. ACRM at the moment is working through not only ensuring we've got a point of contact in staff, but of course ensuring that this is a new area for us, so we need to bring something of value to the sector. There are other players who have been in the practice support space with practice managers. We don't want to duplicate or not make an efficient use of resource, virtually or otherwise. So at the moment, we're working with other peak bodies and stakeholders to ensure that what we do bring out to practice managers in terms of networking support, resources and contact is going to be worthwhile to those practices. Again, to be useful, not to be onerous. But we do envisage we will have networking and other education events to support that.
There's a long history in RTOs. Many RTOs have practice manager workshops and have done the getting the practice managers together. I'm not aware that we've got down to the detail of talking about how we'll do that and how that will happen, because again, that probably sits within that supervisor professional development flexible funding payment, exactly what's done. But the RACGP, as you saw in the opening slides, has the RACGP local, and the same sort of thing that ACRM's talking about. We'll have both, we believe, local medical educators, so medical educators who work in the region, plus practice support officers who will go out to practice support. So we think that we're trying to have a distributed model because we believe that the relationships at the local ground is most important in terms of making things work going into the future.
How will placement processes and practice matching work?
The reality is around the country, there are 9 different processes. So there is going to be differences for someone when you try to make things consistent. What we're trying to do in the meantime is to create some national consistency, and there will be around that. Longer term, it will be nationally consistent. It will be as painless as we possibly can make it. And it will be with reference to what has worked on the ground and what has not. And very, very closely informed by your feedback in the process, we will have one training management system, and it will likely be managed via that process.
Will there be funding for registrar accommodation and other expenses in rural areas?
I guess from our perspective, certainly as colleges and peak bodies, we're not shying away from the hard questions. We're certainly asking ourselves these questions. Lots of questions around placements, how they work. The department, of course, will direct allocations and so forth in terms of what they would like to see come out of the AGPT funded pathways. But underneath that, the colleges will still have the prerogative to advocate for quality teaching places and to advocate for teaching placements that actually support the teaching in our programs. We're taking the great lessons that have been learned by the RTOs. We're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater. We really are trying to take what's been done already and to make sure we can apply that. The same goes for, will we cover accommodation? Will there be extra payments? All of these things have been factored in by both of the colleges, I'm sure, and we're looking at how those can be worked into areas like the flexible funding.
How do we attract more doctors to general practice?
We do not want to see doctors drain out of rural areas. It's hard enough to get them there. We certainly don't want to see a decline in numbers, and everything that we are designing, everything that we are doing to move forward alongside RACGP and in our college-led training has been designed to ensure that we can still get doctors into these practices, into your footprints, and that as supervisors who've been working in the sector for a long time or even a short time, that you can see a flow of young doctors coming through who can potentially pick up the baton at some point in the future, but who at least understand your rural communities and can assist in delivering that workforce support. And I guess that's where I would like to finish off, but to say thank you for all the hard questions, because even though we may not get to answer all of them, we get to go away with this pile of questions and rework the questions that we're developing as colleges for frequently asked questions. It helps us build a resource. There is never a stupid question and there's never a wrong question. It just helps us reframe our thinking and consider how we might best answer that for the sector. So I think this has been a great opportunity to do that, and I hope we get another opportunity in the future as well.
We're looking for long-term solutions. Both colleges are working actively with universities, with student groups, medical student groups, junior doctors. So building those long-term pipelines to increase people choosing general practice as a career. Now, that's not going to change things overnight. I mean, in some areas it might, but we're looking for long-term solutions. And then we've got all these short-term and medium-term solutions and working together looking at priority placements. We still have to, we're waiting for directives from the newly formed WPPs. We don't know where they're going to direct us to put places, and we might have to create training solutions for workforce shortages. So there's a lot of unknowns, but we're working all together to try and fix those problems one by one.
Look, one of the things to say is this change, it's threatening, but it is also an opportunity. And to be honest, the best outcome from the college's point of view is if we can retain everyone who's currently working, every supervisor, every educator, every training program worker, and retain them, because they've got that corporate knowledge and that wisdom and that expertise, the more everyone we can retain is a good outcome. You know, that's really our aim. Our aim through this transition is to find a way to retain as many people and deliver as good a program as currently being delivered all around the country, and then move on from that and make improvements.
Thank you to everybody for participating tonight. Cheers.
Thanks for listening. We'd love your feedback. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please give us a rating and or a review. And if you haven't already, please subscribe and share this podcast with your colleagues. If you'd like to ask a question or suggest a topic, you can reach out to us via our social channels. Simply search GP Supervisors Australia on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, or Twitter. GP Supervisors Australia is supported by funding from the Australian Government under the Australian General Practice Training Program.